It's time for Wisdom on Replay with Nostra Thomas and Coach Jim. Wisdom on Replay is brought to you by Comlink Communications, Levy Steel, the Candywood Wine Cellar, and Cafe 422. Here's your host, Nostra Thomas and Coach Jim.
Welcome to the Wisdom on Replay with Nostra Thomas and Coach Jim.
Oh, he gave me the short name tonight. Yeah. But that's all right, though. We're going to mix and match a little bit.
I was going to say Jimmy, but you said that.
You know, it's fine. That. Just you say James.
Coach Jimmy doesn't sound
only
right.
Two people, I think, in my lifetime got away with James. I had a second grade teacher I didn't like, and my mother when I was in trouble.
I'm going to start calling you James then, huh?
I'd take it from you.
Okay.
I'd take
how
it from
about
you.
There are
some
Jay?
There's some people that it comes out,
I'm
it comes off their lips.
Nice.
There's others that it sounds like dog poo.
Hey, you know what? I was going to have a guest today, but he couldn't make it. Talk about coaching, but we'll talk about that later. But right now, I think it's the right time to talk about the Major League playoffs.
All you Indians fans got to be living high and mighty. I'm working in professional baseball. They are absolutely on fire. On fire. Can do no wrong.
And by the time this airs, we will know if they're moving on or... That's it.
Or moving out. You know, and I know like Francona said, you know, the Dodgers, you look at this whole playoff setup, Tommy, it's, you know, these are wars. If they figured it out that way to have Boston, New York, the Dodgers series started out the same way, close early, Dodgers blow it up, then they get sloppy and they end up winning. I haven't seen a lot of the San Diego and Cubs look like they got after a little bit swinging the bats yesterday.
Well, I'll tell you what, you know how these playoffs go. They go like this. I don't care if you're scoring 10 runs a game during the season. You get to the playoffs, the pitching is just usually takes care of the hitting, because in the regular season, you got your fifth starter coming in. You might have the bullpen pitching. But here, you've got your top three starters coming at it each game.
And like I said, now you're playing... We've always said human chess. You know, it's who flinches first. You know, Scooble got mad when the Indians started playing small ball, because he just gets mad about that, like a lot of big time pitchers do, when he's forced to field the ball. But the advantage. Somebody asked me why the Indians' pitching's been so good, and this goes back to a long time ago, from a scouting perspective, is when you're bringing these guys up from AAA, from AA, or you just signed them or whatever. There's no advanced scouts on them. So there's no way of you getting a scouting report what this kid's throwing. So the only time you're seeing him, Jared Wright, when he came up. Remember, he's the next Sandy Koufax, you know. And it usually takes about a year of advanced scouting to break a guy down. And that's how you tell a prospect if he's there a year and he maintains, or he drops a little or gets better. Because now you've had the most brilliant minds in the game watching this kid for a year and going, okay, here's how you beat him. Back going in 2003, Marlins Yankees, when I was working for the Yankees, we had 19 guys on the Marlins from the All-Star break to the World Series, and we still lost. 19 guys breaking down every player, the whole 25-man roster. And like that, it was just, you know, sometimes fate intervenes and you get the breaks, things go well, Indians are... You know, hopefully they got some more. I always say you only got so many rabbits in the hat, but boy, they got a big hat and they got a lot of rabbits.
You know, it just seems like a very cohesive bunch. And I think who leads in that, and we'll talk about that later too, is the way Jose Ramirez works, even at this stage of his career. Everything he's already done, he's like the first guy out there doing the drills, working hard, staying after, getting there. So it rubs off on the rest of the team, because then they're out there thinking, wow, if he can do it, I should certainly be doing it.
Well, and it's a recurring theme. You know, we said it 1,000 times in the 3-4 times we've been here. Environment. And you have to have guys like that, and then everybody pick up. You know, you talk about quarterbacks, Ed or linebackers or Ed Reed or Lewis or – watching film, tendencies, everything like that. I know when they signed him years ago with the Indians, because he was originally with the Rockies, ended up in the Cleveland system, he was very, very raw. He could hit, but the rest of it was bad. But somewhere in his travels, he got with some Einstein-type players where you know, he'll sit and go, on a 3-2 count, this guy goes to this. Mm-hmm. If it's after the fifth inning, he goes to this. If he's gone, if he's got you 1-1 and it's windy out, like, he has every detail. And that's the greatest players. Like, when you talk to the NFL guys, you know, you talk to Ed Reed, the cadence in a quarterback's voice would tell you if they were going to run or they were going to pass. Stuff like that, just the little nuances. And that's the great thing. You know that about baseball, and I know all the – when people tip stuff or they have a tendency. We used to talk about a friend of ours, if you threw it, we played double A with, I won't mention any names, you threw it waist to knees. He was Joe Boo, he did it 500 feet. If you busted him up high, he was out. And if it was a lefty in the lights, he was out. You know, and but you knew that growing up with him, I knew that playing against him. That's the sign of, that's what the greats do, is they sit and look at nuances,
and tendencies. And the greats also know what they are, pitch, they know what their best pitches are to swing at. Right. I swung at a lot of bad balls because, you know, just aggressive, get in the box, just start hacking. But I mean, today they know, the pitcher knows and the batter knows what he's looking for, and the pitcher knows what he's looking for, because you got to believe there's a ton of data out there that they probably have. If, you know, you're right, if he throws a 2-1 curveball, usually with this situation or at night or during the day, you know they've covered every number. You know that.
You go back to Kirk Gibson when he hit the legend, you know, the Vin Scully call when he hit the home run on one leg and everything like that. He knew that, I think it was in a 3-2, that Eckersley always went backdoor slider. And it was because of an advanced scout that had followed him for 2 years. When he was winning Cy Young's, he goes, he will throw this. And Gibson had memorized the report and got in the situation.
He looked so bad.
He threw that pitch. He just stuck his bat out, boom. Yeah. And he's a legend over that. But if the guy wasn't scouting him, does he have any idea? Probably not. But these guys now, they do it on their own. There's so much film available. There's so much technology available. You know, you can get on your computer and go, okay, here's his last 10 outings. Yeah. Like, if you look at the Williams kid that closes for the Yankees, that's a relief pitcher for the Yankees, he was untouchable for like 3 years. Fastball, changeup. No other pitches. And his changeup, it was like a Bugs Bunny did stop in midair. Then what everybody figured out, just take the changeup. You can't throw it for strikes. So now he's got a 95, 96 mile an hour fastball.
Which now is
Somewhat above average.
Everyone has, yeah.
But you go back and you start looking at that, again, a two-pitch pitcher in the big leagues, you know, you could take a junior high kid up there and he'll guess one out of two and he'll run into it eventually. And that's the crazy
and
part
that's,
with these guys.
Exactly why Eovaldi, I'm so impressed with him. Here's a guy that came in throwing over 100 miles an hour.
And he started,
Has the arm problems, got bounced around a little bit. And boy, did he come up with some pitches now that, I mean, he actually has a 1.5 ERA after, and then they talked to some hitters, and one of the Yankees hitters, Judge, says he just can't get settled in the box because he could throw anything, and
anytime,
there's so many
anywhere,
different things to look at. Plus, he's still upper 90s, so you can't just sit back and think you're batting against Jimmy Key or somebody that.
You look at the kid, what they bring, Whitlock, when they brought him in. He's sitting there blowing 99, and the thing that they were catching up was the 99.
Oh, yeah.
But when he threw, he's what they call, it's an old pitch that's considered new. It's called a kick change, and it fades more than a natural changeup. And you look at those guys getting blown away. They were all kick changes. It arcs up and then dies.
What do they call screwball now?
Screwball.
Because you know somebody's throwing. You know they're still throwing
The American players, it's still a screwball.
Really? I thought they named it something different.
Who knows?
The worst thing for your arm.
Right. Inverted curveball. Who knows? But then I'm trying to think the term the Japanese use for it. They have a totally different name.
Yeah, Valenzuela used to throw it.
Right.
That was his pitcher.
And then when Daisuke and them came up, it was a Sinjo, I think is the term for it, and they turn it over. But that thing, if you've got the arm, but oh man. Mike Marshall, when we were kids, he went like a year and a half, nobody hit him. That's what he threw all.
Matt Keough. That was his.
Yep.
That was his bread and butter.
Because of the
you don't last long throwing that.
Oh, your shoulder. You're begging for shoulder surgery. Absolutely. And the hitters, like I said, the hitters study the, you know, where what makes a difference. And like you see, who doesn't turn a double play? Who doesn't field the bunt? Who doesn't hit the cutoff?
Look at Detroit. They had 15 runners on the bases. And that here, there's the thing that I really got upset. And I wasn't rooting for the Tigers, but I just don't like bad baseball. That second baseman, you've got to be able to hit a ground ball or a fly ball.
Yeah, you're a major league player.
You have got to be able to do that.
Half swinger, push him up.
Right.
That's the one that gets me.
He pops up.
The Indians fooled with it a little bit early in the playoffs, playing small ball. You know, I saw somebody the other night push a bunt down first. You know, we get away from that because I don't think big leaguers think it's masculine enough or that they're good enough that – but the teams that really win, the teams that can really get it done, they'll drop a bunt. They get first and second. They'll bunt them over to third or they'll hit a ground ball to the right side. That's championship baseball. You saw, like, the Yankees didn't know what they have, bases loaded.
Bases loaded, score. Nobody out. They don't score a run.
God forbid. And that's... like I said, working for the Yankees, I'm a Yankees fan by default. And I think you and I were talking on the phone at the time. I said, drop a bunt. Drop a bunt. I don't know that anybody on the Yankees can, but maybe a couple of the pitchers that don't have a
hit. Sure goes different if you get at least one run in at that spot. Because now you're 3-2 and everything changes because you get the last at bat. But I'm not a big Dodgers fan, growing tired of that team.
I get it. Well,
they got so much money. It's it's a losing season if you don't win the World Series.
Yeah, if they
Series.
Don't win the World Series. Yep. They're like the Lakers if they don't get to the
What's
series.
What's the Guardians' payroll? Can't be a whole
30
lot.
Million. Yeah. Well, I don't know. It depends. I would sit and say Ramirez, whatever he's coming in at, maybe 25 or 30. So I take that back. I'm off on that number. But they're under 70.
And it also just, it never ceases to amaze me when a closer comes in or a middle relief guy and he throws an inning and they act like he can't come back for the
next day.
I'm completely lost. Gosh. You got your starter out there throwing 117 pitches or whatever it was.
What did Ryan throw? That went 237?
Yeah, I mean, I don't understand that whole...
There's so much money. Well,
you would know better than me. I mean,
you know what it is? You get into this money ball thing, and there's so much money invested in these guys that they're literally micromanaging their arms. But the problem you have is if you talk to any baseball purist, if you throw mechanically sound, the more you throw, the more you strengthen your arm. Now, like you look at the...
If you're throwing correctly.
Right, if you're throwing right. If you look at the Braves with Maddox and Glavine, none of those guys ever blew out. And I have the pitching program from the Braves. And all it was you'd start, next day you'd maybe play some long toss, go golf, go run, go do whatever. Then the next day you'd get 40 foot on flat ground and throw light. Next day, 45 feet, touch your pitches, I'm not throwing hard. Boom. Third, you know, the 1, 2, 3, you're going into day 4 before your start.
All right.
On the mound, 70%, cut it up, hit your targets. Fifth day, your lights out. They threw all the time, and not one. The only guy out of that lot that blew out was, what's his name? He was real young. Steve, Kent Merker and him, and Kent Merker never mechanically. I saw Kent Merker when I was playing in Columbus. Kent Merker had an absolute cannon, but his arm,
Avery?
Yeah,
Steve Avery.
I always, you know, and people forget he was awfully good his first couple of years.
Oh, he was going to be a superstar.
If you were going to look at the mechanics of how he threw. It was only time. And that's what you love. That's a lot of – that's mine is they send me in to see a guy. Jim, how sound is he? Can he be fixed? If a guy's stuck in his mechanics and he's just got bad arm action, he's going to blow. And you're trying to guess when. And that also gauges into the money. And the other thing it does is when you see bad arm action, now they're not starters. Go out there and throw 15 pitches as hard as you can. Now, what's interesting for the Dodgers, Kershaw's in the pen. So now his 38-year-old.
Is he in the pen for real?
Mm-hmm, they're throwing him in the pen in the series.
Why?
Because he can blow 98, throwing as hard as he can.
He had a good season.
And all this. And here's the thing is when you see closers, they're 9 out of 10, they're fastball slider.
Yeah, that's it.
So now him, change, cutter, slider, curveball, fastball. So seeing that in a closing situation, where you're not going to see the guy three times in a row. You're going to see him right now and out gone. Yeah. They're making, you know, match. And that's what you see a lot of these guys. Look at John Smoltz. John Smoltz started all those years, went to the pen. He almost won the Cy Young out of the pen. Then the end of his career, when he ended up with the Cardinals, he started for a year. I think he was in Boston for a little bit. Started for a little bit, and his arm finally went, because it's hard to sit and throw in volume like starters do. Then you go to a closer's routine. Then you go back to a starter. Kerry Wood, same way. Kerry Wood was a lights-out closer, but remember when he was a starter, he blew his arm out throwing 8 zillion pitches.
When I'm watching Scooble, I'm looking at him, and I'm thinking that big leg kicks.
God, bad mechanics. He's already had Tommy John.
But the thing of it is I think that also hides the ball a little bit from the hitters.
Deception.
Because there's a lot of famous high leg kicks that the ball gets lost in the
Marischal,
middle between.
Marischal, Vita
Blue. Yeah, Vita Blue.
You go, and if you talk to the best in the game, pitching coaches-wise, they'll tell you there's three tenets: location, velocity, deception. If you're short on one, you better be loaded up in the other two.
Yeah.
So, like, Tiant was deception. Yeah. You go Pedro. Pedro could do it either way. Johnny Cueto, the shimmy. When he wasn't right, you know, when he wasn't pumping 98, then it was, let's do some deception. Guys we played with, we were talking about him, just Bobby Skibo, that we both played with when we were in Double A. And Bobby Skibo was like that herky-jerky, come out of nowhere. And if you had to play him at Packard Park in the lights, you had no chance, because it was coming. His arm path was directly in the center field lines. So you didn't see the ball till it was like 5 feet.
And then you had Mr. Smooth, Fleming, who threw great, but his ball never did anything.
No, dead straight.
I mean, right, just straight down the middle, and he got he either had a great game or he would get
either
rocked.
Was right on or he got hit. And then you run it, you know, we ran into a lot of ex-pro players. The best guy I'd seen, and like I said, I'm going off my generation. I'm not going off of all time. And anybody that played in Youngstown and Warren, Billy Sattler. And Billy Sattler got to AAA in Montreal when Pedro was coming, when they were just loaded with pitching. And he got to AAA.
Yep.
And, man, I would sit and play with him. And you know that when we played in a tournament, in a Stan Musial tournament, we were playing Cleveland Milrose, and they had 7X big leaguers against us, a bunch of college kids. You remember that? And Billy Sattler came in through four innings, and he mowed through them. And Henry Rodriguez, that played with the Dodgers, had just gotten released, and he was at second base, and Tom and I were playing in the middle, and Rodriguez goes, "Who is this guy?" And I said, "Billy Sattler." And he goes, I said, "He pitched in the Montreal system." And they were just in awe. They didn't touch him. But then we had to go to – remember, Billy had to leave for work. We brought in another kid, and the other kid, high school kid, he got rocked. But you wonder how good are the big league guys now when you see a guy like that. It was just flat out, lights out, like as good as you're ever going to see. Was it just breaks? Probably in Billy's case, it was just numbers. Yeah. You know, we've seen some awful good people like that.
Also seen a lot of good hard throwers that, like, remember Ernie Camacho from the
Indians? Oh, yeah.
He was back in the day when not everybody threw 95 miles an hour.
Right.
But man.
He was all over the park. Well, and again, we'll go back to, we've said it before, Jack. Kusick threw ridiculously hard, and if he was throwing strikes, great, but the majority of the time he'll tell you he wasn't, you know. And that's why he had a 7-year collegiate, he was up and down for 7 years in the big leagues.
Yeah,
you know, now it's that Miller kid that's with San Diego that came from Oakland. They're showing him closing yesterday. He's throwing 102 on the black, like knee high and in on the black, and he's throwing 102. That used to be like Maddox at like 90, you know, and he's throwing stuff that's 102.
But I think there's a lot of pitchers in the big leagues that probably shouldn't be there yet.
The demand of investment, for pitching of investment,
is, and then you got guys that, you know, they're feasting off of. You either have like the great, and then you have I can't wait to get to the plate guys.
I asked, and you and I, we had a good conversation a couple months ago. Kenny Turpak. Originally a Campbell high school product in Campbell's glory days in baseball. Played at Ohio State. He was an All-American there. Absolute great guy, great scout, really good ball player, great hitter. And him and I we were at one point the only local guys around here that were scouts, and we'd see each other in local, you know, go see a local kid or whatever. And I asked him one time, I said, you know, he got hurt, and I think he was up in AAA for a little bit, and then I think he tore up his shoulder. It was kind of a career ender. And I asked him one day, I go, the big leagues, I go, he goes, you're not, he goes, you see these guys making money. He goes, they're not making money off Curt Schilling or Clemens or, you know, or Kershaw. He goes, they're making their money off the third, fourth, fifth guy and the bullpen guys. That's where they, you know, they take advantage. If you're not hitting off the matchup guys and you're not hitting off the fifth starter, you're going to be a 4A guy. You're going to bounce. And I found that really intriguing. I never thought about that. But if you watch it, but then you watch Mookie Betts last night, he was out of his mind.
Yeah, and he had
looked like he was playing wiffle ball.
Horrible season.
He had the shortstop move.
Yeah, I think that really bothered him.
I think he put so much into it happens. He got out of bounds.
Middle infield.
Infield changes, yeah.
So we have the Guardians, and again, you know, I want to just switch this into what I think is a really good topic for where we are right now, and that's called the coaching and the culture of a team and the leadership of a team. And it goes along
in the environment, yeah,
parallel the environment, with business. I mean, your boss answers to another one and then the CEO. But the organization will run under what that leadership is about. Right. Now, is it about nitpicking stuff or is it about, you know, trying to run somebody else down to make you look better? And there's all kind of different companies and how they operate, and it comes from the top. So you're not going to do things that is against what the leadership's going, or you're going to be gone. So if it goes the same thing to coaching, to me, if you're the coach of a team, you have this type of culture you want. We're going to run out in the field. We're going to look like a ball player. We're going to whip it around. We're going to look good while we're doing it.
You have a standard.
Or you have a sloppy bunch of guys wandering out in the field like a bunch of, you know, hay seeds. Not that looks exactly what the coach is obviously okay with that.
Right.
So you know what I'm getting to. If there's a culture on a team, it comes from the top. So in these situations locally, you know, you've got to look at who is running the show, and if they are any kind of leader or a good head coach, your guys are going to do exactly what you would do, what you expect them to do. As we, otherwise, every now and then it won't happen, but it won't be a constant issue.
And you get into, like, you look at Tony Napolitano at Kennedy, and I use Kennedy because it's an easy reference for me. You know, all those years, high school is a little different because, in a lot of cases, it's the cards you're dealt, and you have to teach to what the pool of kids are. Are you going to run? Are you going to run the wishbone? Are you going to run the veer?
Yeah, what you have.
Are you going to go run and shoot? You know, are you going to run the eye? And like you look at, even if somebody's been moderately successful, somebody comes in, they have to bring their own people and their own environment, their own standards and everything like that. Matt Richardson at Harding now. Steve Arnold, great basketball coach, just a great coach, great teacher. You know, he decided to step down. Matt Richardson is bringing a different environment over there now.
I played with him.
Yeah. You go to, it went Coach Zolchek, Coach Napolitano. Now, and then the coach that came after Coach Nap took Kennedy to the state. And then now they've got a new young guy that was over at Berlin and Canfield. And it, like I said, the kids are different, but you're looking at the head coach that was at Berlin, left Berlin, went out in the private sector, came back. He's coaching at Ridge. Changed the whole environment at Ridge, you know, and they're winning. And Ridge has been up and down. And it, some people just have this, I guess you'd say, the system. Francona, when was the last time Cincinnati got in? Francona's got, he's steered that ship straight, yeah.
And there's all, what was his name? The Cleveland station, the real big guy, Mr. Know-It-All, Mike Trevisano.
Oh, yeah.
He used to claim that coaching does not matter once you get to a certain level. And I got on that show, called in, and we got in the biggest fight. Because, listen, I can tell you, when they go to a team, Lou Holtz goes to South Carolina, a team with no winning culture. He goes there and in 2 years beats Ohio State in a bowl game.
Minnesota.
Yeah, it's just... And here comes the coach. Oh, baseball coach, what does he do? Well, I can tell you this. Davey Johnson, wherever he went, they won. I mean, I can go down the list of here's a guy that it wins. So it, especially the NFL, it is all about that.
Oh, yeah. It's well, and can you – and that's the hard thing. You know, these college coaches are becoming NFL coaches now because NIL. Now they got millionaires. And yeah, this kid, like, I don't have to listen. Right. You know, you're just a step on the ladder. And you look at, you know, the guys of Argent, Tressel, Urban Meyer, Saban. Saban point blank got out. And he'll tell you, I got out because of the portal. He said it in an interview. I had a third string fullback tell me he wanted $300,000 a year.
It's completely ruined college football. To me, both money grabs. Schools grabbing money. You got UCLA traveling hours to go play football across the country.
And that they have the money to do that.
I know, but to me, it loses all the rivalries. It loses the discipline. Who are the guy going to bounce around? It, same thing with college basketball. The one and done. And every Kentucky team, they're going to go out there with the freshmen. They're either going to win or implode in the end because the 18-year-olds implode in the tournament because they're not mature enough to, you know, it takes a, you know, you start, arm gets creaky, missing the foul shots because they don't have those teams that stuck together and made those dynasties, you know, by the time they started.
Like North Carolina, you know, yeah. North Carolina, about they'd be there forever. Yeah. And that's the thing, like with high school in our area, the teams, they have cycles. The teams that have won, win, but then somebody else crops up. Like you went, like, and I'll give an example of my vision. Mooney was Mooney forever, and now they're rebuilding. Ursland was down, obviously, with all the hullabaloo going on there. Danny Reardon, God bless him. But like I said, in the case with all that, you know, they're – but then you go out. Springfield had a run. South Range has had a run. Because now you can – it's almost like a family tree. You can see where these kids – I'm not going to be the guy at Mooney, but I can go to South Range and start. I'm not going to be the guy at Bristol or Southington, but I can go
and
here.
And the coaches are doing it, too. They're looking down the road at these, I got a bunch of seventh graders that can't even tie their shoe. And you don't think that plays into them leaving the school, bouncing around here, going all over the place?
And if you don't have a developmental program where everybody's all in.
It's got to be all in.
Oh, and you just have... You know, you get it. I mean, we could go on for days.
You're not going to teach open a senior open how
enrollment.
To play.
Yeah, open enrollment. You know, kids bouncing school to school. It's amazing. And now what you have is high school football has now become college football. Because there's people out there recruiting kids and, you know, come to this place, come to that place. You know, it's an interesting dynamic out there now. And some of these kids that aren't.
I don't think they're learning anything.
No, I agree.
About
here, there's no the values. Thing.
There's no moral victory, and your teammates expect you to be on the team, and then year two, you just decide, well, you know what? I'm going to chase a few more dolls. Look at that goofball from Tennessee. He went running to UCLA. They can't win a game. So what did he accomplish? He got a few more dollars. Now no one knows his name again. Now that he's not in the, you know, Tennessee's going to be in
playoff. Well, and you look at, you go back to open, and, you know, you're talking college, and if you go back, and I cite this one every once in a while when people start asking me about, well, now that doesn't happen in high school. Harding, when Tom McDaniel was there.
Yeah.
And God bless.
Yep.
People wanted to come play for him. If you go back and look at their roster, at one point they had 6 Division I running backs on that team. So you go Carl Diggs, who ended up a linebacker, but he was a fullback. Derek Toles went to Penn State. Diggs went to Michigan. Claret. Josh Kaysen, who ended up at YSU, he transferred into Kennedy. The young man that went to North Carolina from Kennedy. His dad was a Warren Cup. But anyway, at the point, there were 6 of them. 2 of them transferred out. And then Delbert Ferguson from Ursuline, when Claret graduated, came in. So now you're looking at almost 7. And that's, are you there to play for the coach? Are you there to win? Are you there because all the guys that go there get recruited? There's so many factors in it now and then. You know, baseball, you see it you know, I'm going to go to Canfield. If Canfield doesn't fit me, I'm going to go to Ursuline. If Ursuline doesn't fit me, I'm going to Mooney. You know,
the funny thing about that is you can really achieve a lot more playing baseball on a bad team than football on a bad team, because
right.
Nobody's
coming to the game.
It's an individual based upon if you're pitching, like Paul Skeens, he's on a crappy team when he pitches,
and he may win the Cy Young going 10-10.
But and you can get away with having a bunch of good offensive numbers with a bunch of guys around you that isn't doing anything. But football, there's just way too many pieces.
Well, and the part you get,
I don't know how many careers a Cleveland Browns quarterback. How many of those guys went out to the sea of forgetfulness because they started there first? I mean, and then you don't get another shot. You know, some guy lands in a great position, and he goes, oh, great, Tom Brady. Who knows if Brady would have started out with the Browns or something, if he would ever even got anywhere from there.
And you get into, and the problem is with these dynasties now, and I know we're going to be winding it down here in a minute, you start talking about the basic concept of players, eventually these dynasties spin out of control.
They do.
The Cowboys spun out of control.
It hasn't been relevant since the 90s.
And now you're seeing it.
Well, they make a ton of money. So
you see these guys at Ohio State, at Florida. They don't make a big, but you'll see 7-8 guys getting thrown off the team. And you never know for what. And in high school, you're seeing, obviously, there's a lot going around with that now. And all the coaches go, I had no idea. I'm sorry, somebody in college had an idea, you know.
Well, I'll tell you what, I just got the sign, the very, very subliminal sign by Carl.
Got the gavel, hammer, got the silent
the hammer
gavel on the table.
Us it's getting all very subliminal, Carl.
And the other thing, you know what, we never do enough and mention Carl. He's a godsend. He's been one of the driving powers behind us, and we're unbelievably grateful
for
him giving us
the
show.
And I want to thank a couple other Comlink Communications, where to go for all your IT needs. 422. Try out Candywood Winery also.
Oh, yes.
Great place to go.
Outstanding.
We've got
Jesse DiGiacomo at the Den. We got to thank him for that.
Oh, we have to.
That, you know, Howland Performance, it doesn't happen without him. You know, his building over there has revolutionized what we do. And just a good all-around guy. And all the people that support us as far as the instructional business and the recruiting and the consulting, we'd be nowhere without the people that didn't believe in us. So thank you. And our families.
That's for sure. Well, we're going to wrap up. This was our first 30-minute show on our way to this being the format from here on out on Wisdom on Replay with Nostra Thomas, who knows it all, and Coach Jim, Divine Intervention.
You guys have a great afternoon.